Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Welcome to Signs of Life Radio. I'm Kimberly Saavedra, director of the Comlock Center in California, and I'm here today with Dr. Betty Kovach. She is author of The Miracle of Death and the forthcoming publication, The Merchants of Light, Frequencies of a New Consciousness. And she and I are very pleased today to interview and talk with our very special guest, whom we happen to have met several years ago. Before we get to the introduction, however, we wish to thank our sponsor of today's show, the Windbridge Institute. Windbridge is an independent research organization investigating the capabilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. So please visit www.windbridge.org to learn about their research findings and projects. Our guest, Sharon Mackerlane, is a psychotherapist who lives and works in Laguna Beach, California. In 1996, while walking on the beach with her dog early one morning, she had an extraordinary visionary experience that changed her life. Sharon is author of three books, A Call to Power, The Grandmothers Speak, Our Love is Our Power, Working with the Net of Light that Holds the Earth, and Casting the Net. She travels around the world to teach others how to work with the Net of Light and to share the messages from the Council of Grandmothers. Sharon's website is www.netoflight.org, netoflight.org. Welcome, Sharon.
Thank you.
Sharon, I think that the best way to begin is for you to tell us exactly what that vision was that morning on the beach. But before you do, I just want to tell you that so many of the members of Forever Family Foundation and the Comlock Center are members because they have had visions. Many of them experienced the death of someone they loved and had a visionary experience with that person on the other side. So your audience today is well aware of visionary experience, and they're going to be very interested to hear how you have really maintained a visionary experience with the grandmothers for many years and helped others, initiated others into the same kind of experience. So let's start, Sharon, by you telling us what happened that morning on the beach.
Okay. Let's see. I, like probably everybody who's listening to this, I had been on a spiritual path all my adult life and so dedicated to finding what was true. You know, I'd meditated for many, many years and gone to India numerous times and, read and spent a lot of time in satsang. And then one day I was walking my neighbor's dog. We were between golden retrievers then, so I was walking his down by the beach, and my husband usually walked with me, but he was on a business trip, so it was just me. And as I walked along Heisler Park in Laguna Beach, suddenly I was surrounded by a group of old women, and they were so friendly and happy and welcoming to me that it was disorienting because I'd never seen anything like that before in town. And it took me a while to realize that they were not, in fact, physically real, that I was having a vision. And, of course, you know, all my life I had been so envious of people who had visions. I wished, you know, how come I can't have one? So then I was having one, and it scared me so much. I thought, please go away. No. But they didn't go away. And they were very, very welcoming and understanding, and they saw how scared I was. So they just stayed with me, smiling and waiting for me to get over myself. which I had to do eventually because they didn't leave. And they told me they were the Great Council of the Grandmothers and that they had come because the Earth was in grave danger. The basic energies on Earth, they said, were out of balance. What we humans call yin and yang wasn't exactly correct, but was close enough. And that these two energies were out of balance. There was too much of the energy of yang, the energy of action, doing. This is the masculine principle of energy. Too much of that. Not enough of the energy of yin, the feminine principle, the energy of nurturance, holding, and life support. And so because these two were so out of whack, change was happening too fast. It was accelerated to the point where everything would become destructive. And they said, you look around at your world and all the problems you see, from the degradation of the environment to the persecution of the helpless and the ill, to the neglect of children, everything is just a product of the fact that these two energies are out of balance. It's not anyone's fault. It's not an individual's fault. But the two energies are so out of balance, and that's why we have come. We will not see the Earth destroyed, they said. And they really got my attention when they said that. We will infuse the energy of yin, the feminine principle, back into this planet, and we will do this primarily through individual women and a few men. Initially, they said there will be very few men who will be drawn to this work because they will not understand it. And so we will primarily work through women. And they said, then they said, we're going to give you something. And by this time, I was totally riveted and following their every word. And also, this was happening in a public place where I'm walking the dog. All this is going on, and I'm seeing my neighbors like I see every morning, and they're waving to me, and I'm waving back to them. And they, of course, were not seeing these old women. So I was trying my best to act like a normal person because I knew that I was in some kind of double reality. The grandmothers then said, we're going to give you something that will awaken the energy of yin within you. And from above my head, there dropped down this silk, kind of silky light that enveloped me in this beautiful dusty rose color. And they came in and they held me and rocked me and sang to me. And it was the most fulfilling feeling. I had a sense of being totally complete, that I was complete. And I cried. I was so touched. And they said, this is a call, C-A-U-L, and this will heal, balance, and awaken you to who you really are. You will begin now to bloom as the flower that you've always been and always will be. And again, I had this feeling of utter completion. Anyway, I came home from that walk. I came into the house, wrote down everything I could remember that had happened, and then I put it away. My husband came home the next day from his business trip. I didn't say a word to him because I thought, he's going to think I'm crazy. I can't talk about this to anybody. Mm-hmm. And life took off. I had a number of things happen after that. Basically, a golden eagle landed in our back garden in Laguna, and we don't see golden eagles here ever. It's so heavily populated, but there it was, landing on our garden stepladder. And then I was led to a very wise woman who told me I had to go find out why these grandmothers have come. That sent me into a, you know, tailspin of just praying like a woman possessed for help. And I was then led to a shaman who I told about these grandmothers, who then taught me how to, what she called, journey to different levels of non-ordinary reality, is what they call it, mm-hmm. So I could meet these grandmothers if they wanted to meet me. They did. I was able to meet them. I became their student, and for years, I went to them every day, and recorded everything they taught me. And from that came the books that I've written. And from that have sprung up all these groups of mostly women and a few men around the world who practice this work that's come from the grandmothers. There it is in a nutshell.
That's very beautifully said and completely said. What are some of the countries? I know you've really been all over. Would you just mention some of the countries where...
Sure. I just got back from Holland, and in May I was in... we were in England and in Lithuania. There was a big gathering in Australia at Uluru, which is Ayers Rock out in the outback. There are gatherings in the United States in different places. I'll be going to Pennsylvania next, or in 2 weeks, I'll be in Pennsylvania. There's gatherings in Canada, in New Zealand, Belgium, Switzerland. I don't know. I can't think of where else. I think that's it.
And that's
Slovenia.
Amazing. I think our audience would like to know how, after this experience, here you are, you have these experiences, and you know what you are to do and now want to do. So how do you make contact? How do you get to these places, and how do these people find out about you?
It's been... it's been guided. I've been guided, and they've been guided. I could have never imagined this. Basically, after the grandmothers had begun to teach me, they said, okay, now pass this on to others who don't have it. Pass it on. And the initiatory experience they gave me that day to awaken the energy of yin, the feminine principle within me, we call the grandmother's empowerment. And they said, pass that on. So I called women together to come to my home, women I thought who might be interested, and I told them about the grandmothers, and I passed on the empowerment to them. As the grandmothers had given it to me, I gave it to them. So then from that, women started coming. I then realized I needed to have a meeting. So to this day, I still have a meeting once a month in Laguna where people come from, it's all word of mouth. They just come in and we pass on the empowerment to them. We work with the Net of Light for the good of the planet and ourselves. We do a lot of singing. We do a lot of ceremony. We have a wonderful time together. We don't charge any money for this work. And from that, then maybe a woman who came the first time, I think she had been visiting from Rhode Island, so she went back to Rhode Island, started a group in Rhode Island. And then from there, other groups started in New England, and then pretty soon I was going back for gatherings in New England because there were enough women, they would come together and rent a place, and we'd have a gathering. The gatherings usually last over a weekend, you know, Friday night through Sunday. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's happened that way. Then one day I got a letter from a woman in Lithuania who'd read the grandmother's first book. She was a translator, worked in English as well as in her own language, and asked me if she could please translate the book into Lithuanian, you know, for her women, for the women there, because she thought it would help her country women. And I was thrilled. You know, I didn't even know where Lithuania was. I had to get the map out and find it. So I've been to Lithuania a number of times now, for gatherings there. And from there we got to Latvia, you know, which is not too far from there. So that's how it grows.
Of course, the really big part of your work, too, is the Net of Light. That's just the most amazing work. So maybe you could talk about that and how you came to know about that and how you work with that and teach others to work with
it. Yes, sure. I'd never heard of the grandmothers or the Great Council of the Grandmothers, and so they had to teach me from scratch. And it was probably a good thing because I didn't have any predisposition about how it ought to be. I was totally ignorant. And the same with the net of light. I had no concept of anything called a net of light. And then the grandmothers introduced me to that one day and then began to work with it. And then they said, teach others how to work with it. So, okay, I started doing that. And I didn't understand at first what it was. It was a construct of lighted fabric or lighted threads, like a network or a web of light. And they said, you are this, and this is a way of connecting heart to heart, spiritually. It goes beyond time, goes beyond space. And some of that I understood. A lot of it I did not understand. Initially, I think I thought the net of light was like a meditative tool. That's how I thought of it. Mm-hmm. But as time has progressed, I've been at this now with the grandmothers 21 years, and much has happened in that time. And my understanding has deepened, as has the understanding of all of those involved in the work. The net of light is real. It is a living fabric of light that connects everything within the universe. I am part of it. You are part of it. Everyone is part of it. Every tree, every body of water, everything is held in the net of light and supports everything else. So the more we connect with the net of light, the stronger the support system for ourselves and for the entire planet and for the entire universe becomes. So it was about 4 years ago when my husband and I went to Los Angeles to the Science Museum, and there they had a film about the Hubble telescope, what the Hubble saw. And so Roger dragged me there because I didn't want to go. I thought it was just so boring. I didn't want to see this. Well, we sat there. We watched this, the Hubble telescope. And then it's pretty soon it starts showing all the, the bodies of throughout space that are there, and all these galaxies within galaxies within galaxies, on and on and on. And then they say, then I'm seeing something and I'm looking at it and it looks just like the net of light. And they said, and this is the largest living construct in the cosmos. The science calls it the cosmic web. And I just started to
shake. Oh, Sharon, you had no idea what you were going to see, did you?
No. Oh, no. I was shaking and crying. And my
husband
sticking his elbow in my ribs, like, see, you didn't want to come. You didn't want to come, huh?
Oh, my God.
And so science discovered the net of light back in 2014. And then I began to get things from people via the Internet that the Hindu Vedas, which were written 8,000 years ago, talked about the net of light. It was called Indra's net, and they described it perfectly. So,
and I was in mythology, so people in that field had no idea what that meant. They just couldn't make it out. What was that anyway, the net? And it appears in Northern Europe too, and artifacts, a kind of net-like structure. But
yes,
we didn't know what it meant in those days.
I know. It's in indigenous cultures. It's pretty much all pervasive, but we were all of us were totally ignorant of it. Mm-hmm. So the work with the net of light is so satisfying. It's a way for people to connect themselves to the spiritual realm without getting into any kind of religion or feeling the narrowness of that. It's that you don't have to have a particular mindset, or you don't have to have any faith. You don't have to have anything. All you do is you work with the net of light, which is real, and, you learn that there's a whole lot more than you ever imagined there was, and you're able to do all kinds of wonderful work. We've now worked a great deal with the ancestors of the light. so, and when we do that, then there's this terrific amount of healing that goes on, healing not only this moment, but the past and into the future, which I had, could have never imagined.
Ooh, that's so powerful. And just before, I want you to talk more about that. But before you do, how do you help people to work with it? You talk about how they can make connection with it. How do you do that?
Are there special techniques?
Well, would you like to do it now?
Well, why not?
Sure.
Yeah, we can do it right now. It's not, there's nothing difficult about it. The only difficulty is our minds, because we have all these preconceived ideas. But once you start to experience it, you begin to realize, oh my gosh, my mind can also receive, relax, and enjoy this. It's not a struggle anymore. Mm-hmm. So, let's see. Normally I drum when I do this, but I'm wondering if I can drum without holding the phone like this. I'm going to try it. So basically you just get yourself comfortable. I'm walking up to get my drum. Okay. Can you hear the drum?
Just barely. That's better.
How about now? Can you hear it?
Yes.
Okay.
Could be a little louder if you can do that a little louder.
All right. So think of a radiant net of light, like a great fishing net, spread over the earth, farther than your eyes can see. It covers everything. Holds the earth from above, holds the earth from below, permeates all land masses, all bodies of water, permeates you, holding you, enfolding you in light. Everything is held in light. This is the net of light. The grandmothers say this is the net of light that will hold the earth during the times of change that have come upon you. It will hold the earth steady. Experience walking forward now on the net of light, and somewhere where two of those strands come together is a place that will feel comfortable for you. Sit down there and let the net of light hold you. As you breathe in the net of light. It takes all cares and worries from you and holds you. It is your own heart, the jewel of your heart, that lights the strands of the net of light. Your heart sends light along the strands of the net, and the net of light washes that light back to you. So there is a giving and receiving of light. You are held and you hold the net of light. And every time you think of it, the connection you share grows stronger. Experience our union now as I'm speaking these words and you're listening. We are together in the net of light. Our union with all the sacred and holy places on our beloved earth. Our union with all the great ones, the great beings, the saints, the sages, the avatars who give their lives in service. Our union with all those of good heart who seek the highest good. Together we magnify the power and presence of the net of light. And the grandmothers ask that every time we meet, we cast the net of light for all beings, and this we gladly do. So now we think of our human family, all women, men, children, everywhere. And because there is no limit of time and space, we include here the ancestors of the light, those who've lived before us, and also those who will come after us. And we cast the net of light wherever there is need for light, wherever there is suffering or separation, pain of any kind, the net of light lifts, holds, and upholds. We cast to the leaders of this world, reminding each one that they are a precious part of the net of light. And now we cast to the animal kingdom, asking that every animal receive whatever they most need. We cast to the plant kingdom, to the mineral kingdom, we cast to everything that lives. And that, of course, includes ourselves. And together we ask, may everyone in all the worlds be happy. May everyone in all the worlds be happy. May everyone in all the worlds be happy.
Thank you, Sharon. Well, that is a beautiful and powerful ceremony, and I know that our Indigenous ancestors knew how powerful and creative and life-sustaining ceremonies are. You know, when I was, it was probably 20 years ago or more, I had a vision of the net of light, and it was, as you describe it, beautiful and with these beautiful nodal points of light. And every time I breathed, it breathed. Every thought had affected it. It was, we were just like one fabric. And that was a very powerful experience for me because, of course, in Western culture, we're so separated and cut off from the wholeness of life, and certainly work with the net of light allows us to experience our unity with all life forms.
Beautifully said, Betty. Beautifully said.
And you know, when my son died, he wanted to go to Sedona, and I have a crystal that someone had made in the form of the Kabbalah Tree of Life. And so he had asked, could he take it? And he was going to go there to meditate. Well, he died before he went, but my husband had a vision in that year after his death that on the one-year anniversary of his death, would we, his dad and I and his girlfriend, go to Sedona and meditate at midnight. Well, we did, and with that crystal. And it was a full moon that night, and it was right above us at midnight. And the vision that I had was of the net of light, this incredibly beautiful net of light. And he said to me, it's being strengthened all the time,
yes,
but more work has to be done yet. And
yes,
it felt like that that it was there, but that people on the planet needed to make the connection, the kind that you're teaching.
That's right.
In it. And then just about a month or two ago, I just sort of out of the blue, I felt him say that so much has been done now with the net of light that we're all moving to a higher level of being, of activity on the planet. And
I'm so happy to hear that. I know that's true. I've been told the same, but it feels so good to hear that he told you that.
And you've been hearing it, too. You've been feeling
it. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, and I see it. I see it in the changes in the people who do this work. Oh, yeah.
I wanted to go back to what you said about the healing, working with the ancestors in the past, present, and even future. Talk more about that. That's very powerful work.
Yes, it's very, very powerful. It truly heals the past and heals the present. So, we've done this for the last maybe 4 years now, and we do it in our small groups, and we've done it at the large gatherings that we've had with several hundred people together. And those are really... That's very exciting to do work like that, because you're in a room. I think for me it's especially exciting when we do that in Europe, because when we meet in Europe, we get people from all of these different cultures coming together, from different parts of Europe where they've had wars for time out of mind, busy killing each other for many, many years. And so to do this ancestral forgiveness work, we work with the grandmothers, and we work with the Ho'oponopono, the Hawaiian forgiveness work that came down from the kahunas. And we go back down the ancestral lines as far as the work wants to go, at one time. And we've worked with the familial lines, the mother line and the father line, as far down as it wants to go. And then in the last year, we've also worked with the ancestors of the land itself.
Oh, that's
so
good.
A great deal. When we did that at Joshua Tree in California, it was very potent. A lot of potent healing took place between the Native American culture and the cultures of the people who came in and usurped their lands and power. Mm-hmm. So that was a very meaningful work. And then we did that work with the land in Europe. And it was especially potent for me. It was especially potent in Lithuania, because Lithuania has been so invaded by so many cultures for time out of mind, and attempts to stop the language, stop the culture. And so for that, to bring back those ancestors of the light from long, long ago and honor them and ask for their forgiveness and help, it was, whoa, there was not a dry eye in the room. It was beautiful, really beautiful.
Our ancestors have taught us, in every way that I think they can, that the land and the language are connected. Either we are connected, our energy, our frequencies. Is that when people are displaced from their land, that there's a terrible upheaval that takes place within the psyche.
Yes.
And we've been unaware of those things, I think.
Yes, there's wounds. There are deep wounds everywhere, really. But I find the most deep wounds are in Europe. We're very fortunate here in America, and I think the Australians and the New Zealanders are equally fortunate, the Canadians, because these lands I've just named here have not been settled that long. And so there are not as many overlays of... I don't know what else to call it, lockdown or capping off the ancient ways. That's not existed here for very long. So we can still easily access the ancestors of the land here. We can easily access the ancestors of the land in Australia. There's a living culture still within the Aboriginal nations. With the same with the Maori and the Waitaha in New Zealand. So we can easily access that, but it's a lot more work to access the ancestors of the land in Europe, because there are hundreds and hundreds of years of denial of the ancestors of the land.
Yes, that's true. I remember reading that in your book, and I was kind of amazed that it would be easier here, given what the kind of genocide that we had with the native peoples. But I guess what you're saying is that in spite of that, it hasn't been that long, and they, since they have been honored by the native people here and kept alive.
That's right, because the genocide took place in Europe as well, but much longer ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been,
mm-hmm.
and then there's been actual capping off of the sacred sites, a lot of the sacred sites in Europe. So it's mm-hmm. much harder to access. These are mostly in here, most of the sites are not capped.
That's very interesting, Sharon. I'd like to just go to what you had said about how you felt when you traveled in southern Italy, because that relates to what we've just been talking about, that when you were in southern Italy, could you just talk about that feeling of emptiness and something had been lost there?
Oh, yes. As you say that, I got chills all over. Ugh. It was very tough because the land is beautiful. The food is wonderful. The people are charming. And the culture is so interesting. There's so much that's just wonderful there. But spiritually, much of it has been deadened, muted, down, dropped way down from Roman times onward. There's like a grief in the land. And maybe that's why, I don't know. The mafia is so very present there and so able to do its dirty work. And it's also Western religion in this case.
Very strong there.
Is very, very, and it's what happens when there is a sacred place and there are vested interests, the vested interests always build on the sacred place. And so, I mean, that's both a blessing and a curse. They,
yes.
they build churches, chapels or cathedrals or something on this sacred place, and in so doing, at least we don't have a McDonald's there. I mean, that's good. Their attempt, they do that in order to usurp the power of that place for their own ends. And so when you go then to these sacred wells, sacred caves, holy places, you know, that have been there for time out of mind, it's very hard to get at the, you know, to feel the power. Because, of course, in working with the Net of Light, what we're always after, what we care about, is connecting everyone and everything on Earth mm-hmm. and getting past this sense of division and into this oneness. And when these sacred places have been capped off, it's hard to access that power. So southern Italy was particularly difficult, and I don't think it's just for me. I think all of Italy is difficult, but southern Italy particularly.
You know, when I read that, I was so amazed because, you know, the 20th century has really brought about so many discoveries of our ancestors' past in which they truly were, like so many of the indigenous people in other places in the world. We had a deep and profound shamanic culture. And the Greek scholar Peter Kingsley had discovered the pre-Socratic philosophers were actually powerful, powerful shamans.
Of course.
And scientists, ambassadors, and they built a culture. One of the most powerful places was in southern Italy.
Yes, that's right.
And they had, you mentioned Cori and, of course, Persephone, and that they were so powerful in that entire region that the priestesses of Persephone would go, I think, each year to Rome. That was, of course, they were 500 BCE until right up to the time of Christ. They continued, but they had to go underground. But that this was one of the most powerful, powerful spiritual places, and their sacred places must have been very powerful. And when I read that, you know, your feeling there, I thought probably a place, I think Balea was one of the places, and that's even south of Naples. But it just made me feel that where so much has been, the loss of it would cause so much grief in the land and in the sacred places. And
that's
those
true.
Who are sensitive
it's
enough like
that. It's true. And there's a... Even the Catholicism in southern Italy is quite, to an outsider's eyes, quite brutal. It's a lot of suffering, a lot of blood, gore on the statues and all like that.
Ooh.
It's not, it doesn't make your heart expand with joy when you're in that presence. It's like, ooh.
You feel the
grief, you feel the loss. It's not pleasant. But what I did there, it was so interesting. I ended up in southern Italy right after a grandmother's gathering in Ireland. The confluence was very interesting because in Ireland, there was a lot of work with the sacred sites there, which are quite potent not capped off. I don't know how they ever achieved that.
Well, they did hang in there a little longer than the rest.
They hung in there a little longer, and for some reason there's a lot. There's still a lot of power in the land there. So when I was in southern Italy, then I would just call on those Irish sites and ask for their help, you know, to help bring life back into these power sites in Italy, which had been capped. And then many times I would do it. I'm just talking to you like this, and I'm thinking, who in the world is going to want to hear this stuff? You know, I'm doing it a lot. Who knows? Anyway, whoever you are, I would do it in the water. I would because through the water, the net of light can move unobstructed in the water. Whereas if I sat in the actual basilicas or in the wherever they were, the cathedrals and stuff like that. I could hardly access anything. But if I let myself float around in the water, you know, around the town and thought of those places and called on the net of light and called on the Irish power sites, then the energy could move.
That's amazing. I think we are just beginning to learn in our culture the power of the mind and the heart and what it, with intention and
yeah. We're not helpless in spite of all that, you know, attempt to lock all that stuff off, you know, in order that humanity, or not humanity, but certain men could keep the power for themselves. In spite of all that, we can still bring that back to life.
We can penetrate that. And I liked your images. They were so like images that my husband and I had received in vision that of just when you say capped over, we had seen kind of the earth as like a... It was cemented over with this aggressive masculine energy and all people, and that it was like cement, but that if we made contact with those nodes of light, with that net of light, and would bring it down through our heart, we became like, I think you said, a beacon of light. Was like, my husband saw it as a lighthouse.
Yeah.
That we could send that, then that light, once we could hold it and root it in the earth, take it down to the center of the earth, it would become like a lighthouse, and that light was going all the time. And
exactly
it was very similar to your image, Rhea, I thought of a tower. What did you call it? Beacons of light.
Beacons of light. Well, what the people who hold these net of light groups around the world, there's over 200 of them now, we call them beacons because that's what they're doing. They're anchoring this net of light for the planet.
I love that. And isn't it beautiful when we're in our own journeys, and certainly we in Western culture have been so cut off, and as you said, you know, we spend so much of our time trying to find connection, what is true and what isn't true, and then we begin to realize that in our visions we've had the same kinds of visions, and that's really confirming, isn't it?
Yes, it does me good to speak with you and hear what you and your husband found and what your son has communicated with you. It's beautiful. I'm grateful for that.
Well, I think that, you know, there's so many people who come to the earth to really understand, and I think it seems to me make some kind of connection to the earth, and when they go then to the other side, they are working very, very diligently with us.
Absolutely. There is no, I mean, we've learned by working with the net of light there's a change that takes place, but there's no ending. Death is not any kind of ending. It's a passage into another kind of consciousness, another place, another way of working. But it goes on and on and on.
Sharon, I was thinking to ask you something about that. You know, Signs of Life is a radio show that's sponsored by Forever Family Foundation, and that nonprofit was created, what, probably 15 years ago or something? And it is, its mission is to help people in grief and to further afterlife research. To help understand that there is more to life than the material world. And what you've been talking about throughout today's show is so many different signs of life that you have received and interacted with and grounded and shared. And have you had any experience with people other than the grandmothers in all of your different places and times?
You mean like other forms of divinity?
Well, not necessarily. Just people. Life.
On the other side, you mean, who passed
beings,
on?
Beings,
From
people or beings other than the grandmothers? Not that I mean,
yes,
beings,
yes.
But I'm thinking in terms of the people who are listening today, who are in grief or are healing through their grief. Can you share anything about what you've learned and experienced that would speak to that?
I can share a few things, and stop me if I go off topic, you know. It's all, everything I've learned in these 20 years of accelerated, and it was going on before then too, growth since the grandmothers showed up, is part of everything else. People say to me, oh, you really have faith. Actually, no, I don't have faith. I have experience.
Oh, I'm so with you on that, with faith. So much.
Pardon?
I said, I'm so with you on that, that it is a matter of experience, not faith.
Yeah, I remember when I was a young woman, and I struggled to have faith, you know, because that's what I was trying to do, was, know that there was more than just what I'd seen, et cetera. But at this point in my life, it's all kind of come together in all these different experiences, and it's just life continuing on is as real to me as what I'm going to have for dinner tonight.
That's good. Yeah,
I mean, maybe more real, because that could change, you know, what I'm going to have for dinner. But it is
right. I mean, it is an eternal. Well, and of course, the grandmothers could never appear to you if there weren't another dimension of reality.
Yeah, that's right. And I trust that other dimension. I mean, I really trust it. It's at first, when I was working with them, I mean, I would get these messages and stuff, and I'd think, oh my God, did I make that up? Is that my thought? You know, how do I know that's real? I mean, I was second guessing myself till I was blue in the face.
And I
just had the worst time trusting my own inner knowing. But now I know. I mean, look, these kind of offbeat things that come to me, these are not my thoughts. I wouldn't think that, or I wouldn't even come up with that stuff.
Right.
It's coming from the source. And so yeah. I've had my best friend died, I guess maybe 6 years ago now, maybe longer. And I've experienced her a number of times.
Oh, that's good. Beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My spiritual teacher died maybe 5-6 years ago, yeah. And I've experienced him a number of times.
When you experienced them, were they in waking experiences or dreaming experiences? Or
yes, sometimes waking, sometimes in dreams. Yeah. sometimes they just come, boom, right there.
Unexpected.
And I know, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we are really beginning to awaken, I think, in Western culture. And it's a phenomenal world that we're confronting, one that we had been taught did not exist, and yet we're experiencing
it. Isn't it thrilling? I find it
so much more interesting
than the
one thing,
I mean,
too, is it? I'm sorry, go ahead.
The rest is fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the world. I love the world, but this is thrilling, the stuff that comes from the inner planes. It thrills me because it puts a new light on everything. I can see things more clearly. I understand, you know, issues, problems, thoughts that had never made sense to me, or what does that mean? All of a sudden, there will come this bolt of total radiant understanding that's incontrovertible, and it's like, there it is! Oh, my God, that's it.
Yes,
those gifts from the inner are priceless.
Yes, I just think that what we have done in culture, though, we came up, for lack of enough data, we came up with one of the most devastating worldviews imaginable, that we are nothing, we cannot affect matter, and that it's all a material fluke, that's all there is, no meaning and no purpose. And now, of course, scientists they have shown that that is not true. Quantum physicists have certainly shown us that's not true, and our inner experiences have allowed us to experience that that's not true.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you talk about, too, is that, you know, that this is a heart consciousness, and when we connect with these nodal points, we feel this flow of love in a way that we hadn't imagined either before.
Right.
And that love is really the core of...
Our love is our power, Betty.
I just started looking at your book to say yes. Our love
and,
is...
And no kidding, that's not just a phrase. Our love is our power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really beautiful that we can... That how creative and healing in every way love is, and, of course, how powerful it is. But there was one other thing. I think we still have a minute. Do we have a minute? That they talk about ceremony, and that's something in our culture, too, that we had lost an understanding of and saw it as empty actions. But ceremony is so important. Could you talk just a little bit about what they say?
Yeah, basically the grandmothers say, use ceremony when you can, because ceremony bypasses the limitations of the mind. It goes into the viscera, into the body mind, and you can experience things in a new way. The mind is always yes butting everything.
Yes, that's right. Oh, here I'm doing it.
But it makes it small and but ceremony expands it.
That's so nice. Sharon, we have about 2 minutes left, and I would like to give you the opportunity to include anything that you might want to before we wrap up, as well as talk to the listeners about going to the Net of Light and what they might find there, or anything you might have coming up in the next few years, or books or projects or anything.
Sure. There will be another book. I'm compiling material for it, but I haven't started putting it together yet. There will be a variety of gatherings around the world. There is one in 2 weeks in Western Pennsylvania. There will be a large gathering at Joshua Tree in California, Southern California, in at the end of April 2018. There will be a gathering in Northern California. I think that will be in November of next year. Not this year, and there'll probably be one in Belgium. I don't know where else yet. But if you go to netoflight.org, you'll see whatever events we have coming up. You'll also be able to hook up with any groups that may be operating around you. I'm thinking there's a group in Idlewild right now. I don't know how close you are to Idlewild, California, but there's one there that's just got started. The website is geared for to give you as much information as possible. So we've got a lot of stuff there. We've got all the songs we sing, which we use in ceremony, and a lot of videos.
Oh, that's so
interviews with people, how to work with the Net of Light, how to pass on the grandmother's empowerment.
Okay.
The books are up there on the website. You can get the books through the website. You can get them on Amazon.
We're out of time.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Sharon. Thanks to our Windbridge Institute for sponsoring today's show. It's been wonderful to talk with you today.
Sharon, you're a real jewel.
Wonderful to talk with you, too.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
For the rest of the time. Bye-bye.